This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell hit the button today, launching what has been called the nuclear option, eliminating a Democrat-led filibuster against Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Ed Whalen, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, a former law clerk to Justice Scalia, joins us with the latest in just a moment. And Michelle Bachmann, former member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, will join me in studio with the latest on the growing scandal involving former National Security Advisor Susan Rice. We'll also get her take on what may unfold in Syria as a result of the chemical attacks. Also, as we mark day 77 of the Trump administration, negotiations continue over the repeal of Obamacare. The future of the Supreme Court is being shaped as we speak, and we're getting a glimpse of just how dangerous the world has become in large part because of the failed policies of the Obama administration. How should Christians be processing and responding to what is happening around us? Dr. Ronnie Floyd, a member of the Family Research Council Board, and a pastor, the senior pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas, joins me for that conversation here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You know it. If you miss anything on the way home, you can find it later. It'll all be archived right there on TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, a historic day and a very busy day in Washington, D.C. The Senate Republicans have pulled the trigger on a so-called nuclear option over the filibuster of Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Because this filibuster was going to block the nominee of the president to the Supreme Court, first time ever, the move sets up a vote Friday evening for Gorsuch. This will only require a simple majority vote. Here's a clip of John Cornyn. He was on the floor earlier today in the Senate discussing the Democratic filibuster of the Supreme Court nominee. John Cornyn is the majority leader there in the Senate. Here's what he had to say.
The Senate has just restored itself to an almost unbroken tradition of never filibustering judges.
Well, the Democrats had lined up under Chuck Schumer to filibuster a Supreme Court justice. Well, they got cut off at the pass today. Joining us to talk about it is Ed Whalen, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and as I mentioned, a former law clerk to Justice Scalia. Ed, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Historic day, is it not?
It's a great day. It's really wonderful that this nomination battle ended up abolishing the filibuster. It paves the way not only for Neil Gorsuch to be confirmed, but also will make the things a lot easier for the next nominees.
Are you surprised that they chose to filibuster this first pick from the president that was just replacing Justice Scalia, his seat, which, you know, was not going to change the balance of the court? I thought they would wait until the second go-around and not do it this early, resulting in the actions taken by Mitch McConnell with the so-called nuclear option.
Well, they picked the worst possible context for fighting the fight. And it's not simply that this is the Scalia seat, but also that Neil Gorsuch is so highly regarded, so respected across the political spectrum. He, of course, received a unanimous, well-qualified rating from the American Bar Association, has received rave reviews from everyone who knows him. And he unified the Republican coalition in a way that many other nominees would not have done, in a way that perhaps the next nominee would not have done. So I am amazed, astounded, but very grateful for the Democrats' profound obtuseness on this. They fought this battle on the wrong terrain. They lost it big, and it is a huge victory.
Well, and Ed Whalen, the Democrats in many ways set this up with actions they took back in 2013.
That's right. Back in 2013, they abolished the filibuster for lower court nominations and executive branch nominations. They did so after facing a much smaller number of filibusters of President Obama's judicial nominees than President Bush had faced back in 2003 to 2005 when Democrats first launched their unprecedented campaign of partisan filibusters against lower court nominees. And, of course, what they did 3.5 years ago set the stage for today and also set the model for what Senator McConnell did. And it's also worth noting that back in 2013, they had no principled reason for carving out Supreme Court nominees from the abolition they did back then. The only reason they did so is that the abortion groups on their side were worried that if they abolished the Supreme Court filibuster in the abstract, it could come back to benefit a Republican nominee in a way that could hurt their sacred cause of Roe versus Wade. That's happened now. And again, Harry Reid set it up. Harry Reid said all along that he would abolish the filibuster if Republicans dared to filibuster a Hillary nominee. So we have the occasion today, and again, it really paves the way for the next vacancy, which would have been really, really difficult and now ought to be really, really easy to fill.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Ed Whalen, my guest, discussing today's actions in the United States Senate with the so-called nuclear option, eliminating the filibuster of Supreme Court nominees. Now, Ed, this kind of reveals something about the left. They know that almost everything that they want to accomplish in terms of whether it's their radical social policy or even economic policy, they know the place that they have to accomplish that is not Congress, but it's the courts. That's where they accomplish, whether it's their gender confusion or whatever, it is done through the courts. And that's why I guess they're fighting tooth and nail to try to keep the balance of the court moving in a liberal direction.
Absolutely. A year ago, they thought they had a liberal majority locked down for the next generation. Again, going into the election, they were confident that Hillary would win. They were bragging, not just Reid, but Tim Kaine and others, about how the filibuster would be abolished like that if Republicans dared to use it. So they had their hopes very, very high. And I don't think they've gotten used to the difference between a Senate majority and a Senate minority. They don't seem to have figured that out quite yet.
Now, Ed Whalen, it's important to help our listeners understand when we're talking about this filibuster, this is of judicial nominees, in this case Supreme Court nominees, because as you pointed out, the lower courts were addressed by the Democrats back in 2013. This is not dealing with the legislative filibuster. We'll still see filibusters of legislation, meaning that, as we've often talked about, having to get the 60-vote threshold to move legislation through, that remains intact.
Absolutely. There are folks with different views on that matter, but what I want to emphasize is that some folks think, oh, this is a slippery slope to abolishing the legislative filibuster. But the legislative filibuster arose and exists for completely different reasons. The judicial filibuster is, in practice, is a recent innovation that has always been very controversial. The Senate rules consistently treat nominations and legislation differently. And now that we have this abolition of the filibuster for nominations generally, that simply reinforces the broader distinction that the Senate calendar and other aspects of Senate practice used to distinguish between nominations and legislation.
So from here, Ed, walk us through what we'll see happen in the next 24 hours.
Sure. Well, it's really quite simple. Cloture was obtained earlier today, I believe at around 12:40 or 12:45. There is a 30-hour window for Senate floor statements, and then after that 30-hour period passes, which would be around 6:45 tomorrow evening, there will be a final floor vote on the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch. Now, it's possible there could be some agreements to move that time one way or another, but I expect it will occur right around then. And then shortly thereafter, he will be sworn in. He will be on the court for the April argument session of the court, and we'll be able to contribute to that, including some important cases involving religious liberty.
Right. I was going to say, is it important to have him on the court for this next set of oral arguments? The arguments are going to be presented, the cases before the Supreme Court. What are some of those cases, Ed Whalen, that the court will be taking up this spring?
Well, let's see. You've caught me a little unawares here. Let me see if I can get this up in front of me here now. There, most importantly, there's a case out of Missouri called Trinity Lutheran Church v. Comer that basically involves whether certain benefits from the government, I believe in this case.
This was, it was a playground rubberized material from recycled tires in that particular case that I think, if I'm thinking of the right case, that
yes, you are.
Because it was a Christian entity, it was denied access to what other educational operations were given access to.
Right. So basically, whether there's some violation of the Establishment Clause and extending to, in this case, to a playground of a religious of a church, the same sort of secular benefits provided to all sorts of other individuals and entities. That's the case that I think is of greatest interest to social conservatives. A number of other cases, frankly, I've been so busy on the nomination that I have not studied the April calendar. But oral arguments in the calendar run on begin on April 17th and run through April 26th, 6 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of two consecutive weeks. And so Justice Gorsuch will be able to make his mark very soon.
So your anticipation of what the vote will be tomorrow?
Let's see. I think that Senator Bennett of Colorado announced that he's going to vote against Judge Gorsuch on the merits because he's a little upset by the abolition of the filibuster. So I believe that would take us down to, 545, maybe. I think I had that right. At the 52 Republicans, along with Manchin, Heitkamp, and I believe there's one more whose name is escaping. Let's see. Yeah, so I think about 55-45. He is. It's greater than 50. Donnelly was the third.
Right,
I'm not remembering of Indiana.
All right, Ed Whalen, thanks so much for joining us. And I know you've been working hard on this from the very start, so congratulations as this unfolds before us today.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, Ed Whalen with the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Tomorrow afternoon, or tomorrow evening, we will have a new Supreme Court justice. And to his credit, Mitch McConnell said, told me, face-to-face in a meeting, and he said publicly the president's nominee will be confirmed, and he's on track to do that. All right, when we come back, Susan Rice, growing scandal. Did the Obama administration use intelligence material for political purposes? Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann joins me in studio for that conversation and what may be ahead in Syria. That's next here on Washington Watch.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/Washington-update.
America's primed for change. In Washington, a new administration is in place, and opportunity is the new buzzword in the nation's capital. The question is, what will we do with the moment that's before us? What changes can conservatives make to undo the past 8 years? Join us at the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., where you'll be informed and mobilized to protect religious liberty, champion life, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. This action-packed conference is one you won't want to miss. Past speakers at the event include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Senators Ted Cruz and Tim Scott, Speaker Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Sean Hannity, Phil Robertson, and many more. Mark your calendar for October 13th through 15th and join us in Washington. Register now at the early bird rate of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
It's no secret that many members of the media are clueless where it comes to the essential role religion plays in our society. At a time when faith and religious liberty are the subject of much debate, this is a big cause for concern. This lack of understanding raises the question, can politics and current events be written about without the aid of religious context? Can the American media faithfully carry out its duty to tell the whole story if it does not grasp the rich culture of faith that surrounds its content? In an important talk, Michael Cromarty of the Ethics and Public Policy Center uses as his foundation the idea that there is hardly any story in the news today that is not somehow related to religion. Using his unique perspective on the American media's interaction with matters of faith, he also delves into the practical way in which his Faith Angle Forum is helping to bridge the media and religion divide. Visit frc.org/mediaandreligion to view this talk and many more. That's frc.org/mediaandreligion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, my wire's straight here. I'm all wrapped up in my chair. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. I know you couldn't see that because it's radio, but I'm describing it for you. I had my earphones wrapped around my chair, and so my ears were down to my knees. But I've recovered. All right. A lot happening here in Washington. It's intense. We're 77 days into the Trump administration, and things are happening at, I would say, a pretty fast pace. I think I mentioned this earlier, I had not been on the White House side of Pennsylvania Avenue in 8 years. And with this change of pace, with actually a friendly administration, we've been there a lot working on various issues, obviously in a lot of communications. And a lot of efforts in play to stop the Trump administration and trip them up at every turn. And it's been interesting to watch, you know, President Trump has gotten out and said some things. And, of course, the media has said, no truth in it. One of the things he said, he believed that the Trump transition team, Trump Towers, was being monitored, their communications. Well, you know, he was criticized for that, saying he didn't know what he was talking about. But we are now watching this week the unfolding scandal of Susan Rice, former national security advisor to Barack Obama, in her role in reportedly spying on members of Donald Trump's campaign and transition team. How far did they go, and how serious is this? Well, joining me now is a former member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and presidential candidate herself, former Congresswoman of Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann. Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you. A pleasure to be here with you.
I should say back to Washington Watch, a frequent guest here. Look, you were on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. You've dealt with the sensitivity of classified material. That is closely watched for, you know, obvious reasons. In this case, so our listeners understand what we're talking about, the government can collect data on foreign individuals.
Only foreign individuals. The only way anything could ever be done on an American citizen and also in the United States is with pre-approval from the FBI, and of course there has to be probable cause in order to do that. None of that happened here.
And what has happened when, let's say, a foreign official is communicating with an American citizen? Mm-hmm. The intelligence gatherers mask the identity
of the
American
blind.
Official.
The American official is blinded, and it is not even known to the intelligence community. And the way it is listed on any document is American number one or American number two. No identity is related to that for obvious reasons, because we secure the privacy of Americans' phone calls.
So what we have here is reports, well, acknowledgement that Susan Rice unmasked these American individuals and they were associates of Donald Trump, a part of his transition team. And
that's
campaign.
Right. She revealed. So unmasked is kind of an unfamiliar term to a lot of people. What that means is she intentionally asked the intelligence community to reveal and expose the names of the people on this phone call. Now, I just want to give a little context. This is unprecedented. Never before have I ever heard of a national security advisor requesting the intelligence community to reveal to her the names and identities. Now, this is very big, because we have no information that she was looking to secure information from anyone on the Hillary Clinton team or on the Bernie Sanders team. She was looking for information specifically on a political opponent to the Democrat nominee. This is unprecedented.
Is there any oversight or any? I mean, you know, I know we have the FISA court, which mm-hmm. is a secret court, which I have trouble with already. But does anyone provide oversight? Does she simply ask for and is able to obtain then the unmasking?
And this is a whole separate discussion. The FISA court itself is a form of oversight. Because some things can't be requested in the public
right.
for obvious reasons, national security reasons. But the reason why we even know about this story is because there were people in the intelligence community who were appalled at what Susan Rice had done, because they saw that the intelligence community was being misused for political ends. And they wanted that information known. The individuals didn't share classified information, but they were in effect whistleblowers. But again, look at the context. This is one of the most senior people in the United States government. The National Security Advisor is the top person in the United States charged with keeping us safe and with keeping American global and domestic interests safe. And she misused and abused that office. So she used the instrumentality of the intelligence community in our government to gather, without a doubt, political information that could be used against political opponents. No one knows of that ever being done before. And if you're trying to gauge this, this would be 1,000 times worse than Watergate.
If this information was released by her once she obtained it, that is a felony.
Oh, without a doubt. Leaking the information is. And if you notice, Susan Rice lied on TV about, she said, oh, I didn't know anything about this intelligence that was being gathered, when we know, in fact, she did. She's now subsequently gone on MSNBC and admitted, yes, I did know about this. But she says, I did not leak the information. So she's trying to say, I wasn't involved in criminal activity. The point isn't criminal activity. The point is the National Security Advisor was looking to get political
right.
motivated information and then spread it across the government where it easily could be leaked.
We're up against a break. I want you to stick around, because I want to talk about what's unfolding in Syria as well. But I would just say, I have a hard time believing Susan Rice, if you'll recall.
She's lied multiple
times. Benghazi.
She lied to me and my committee on Benghazi. So this woman has a long track record of obfuscating and trying to hide information that would hurt the Obama agenda.
All right. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. Folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit, continue talking about foreign policy. We're going to talk about what has happened in Syria, where chemical weapons have been used. The Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, making a statement today. We're going to hear that, and I want to get Michelle Bachmann's response. Then a little bit later, Dr. Ronnie Floyd's going to be joining us, going to talk about all these things happening, day 77 of the Trump administration, things happening on our left and on our right. As Christians, how should we process and respond to all that which is before us? Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
America's primed for change. In Washington, a new administration is in place, and opportunity is the new buzzword in the nation's capital. The question is, what will we do with the moment that's before us? What changes can conservatives make to undo the past 8 years? Join us at the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., where you'll be informed and mobilized to protect religious liberty, champion life, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. This action-packed conference is one you won't want to miss. Past speakers at the event include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Senators Ted Cruz and Tim Scott, Speaker Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Sean Hannity, Phil Robertson, and many more. Mark your calendar for October 13th through 15th and join us in Washington. Register now at the early bird rate of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Twitter. Got my dancing shoes on. All right. By the way, I'd love to read your emails, tony@tonyperkins.com. Shoot me an email if you want to send me something. All right, continuing our conversation with Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman from Minnesota and a member of the Permanent House Select Committee on Intelligence. Michelle, I want to shift gears to, you might need that earpiece so that you can, you don't get it all wrapped around you like I got mine wrapped around me, but Rex Tillerson making a comment regarding what has unfolded in Syria. We were talking about this yesterday, and, you know, of course, we didn't know all the facts, but the evidence pointing to Bashar al-Assad using these chemical weapons, this is what Rex Tillerson had to say earlier today.
There is no doubt that Syria, the Syrian regime under the leadership of President Bashar al-Assad, are responsible for this attack. Assad's role in the future is uncertain, clearly, and it would seem that there would be no role for him to govern the Syrian people. We are considering an appropriate response for this chemical weapons attack, which violates all previous UN resolutions, violates international norms, and long-held agreements.
We were talking about this yesterday with General Boykin, and as we were looking at that, and North Korea. But those are pretty strong words coming from the Secretary of State, would suggest that something – the United States is going to respond to this.
Well, the Secretary of State was definitive in his remark. He was assigning blame without any question to the current president of Syria. This is very serious. No president – no parent could keep a dry eye if they saw what happens with the use of chemical weapons. It's something across the world that we understand should never be done. World War I taught mankind, right, you never use chemical weapons. And here they've been used more than once on one occasion. And we were assured, when I was on the Intelligence Committee, we were told that they were going to be secreted out of the country. Russia was going to be involved in that effort. Clearly, either that didn't happen, or there's subsequently been chemical weapon factories that have been created, and they're continuing the use of this horrible, inhumane form of warfare, and it must be stopped. Where the United States will go with this now, I'm not sure. During the campaign, President Trump sounded like he didn't want to have a strong footprint in the Middle East, but he also knows who his friends are with Israel. He also knows who the enemies are as well.
Well, this is pretty complicated because it's not just taking on Syria. And
not anymore, because now Iran is sitting parked in Syria. Literally, we in a family research council tour to Israel, we stood on the heights of the Golan Heights.
We were actually watching some of the airstrikes.
We were watching some of the fight go on, where Iran had a presence, Russia had a presence, and this is something that we need to recognize. This is a very serious issue. Times have changed even since the time, Tony, when our group was in Israel. Now Turkey has joined up, and they're in league with Russia as well. So we have a very unusual, almost an Ezekiel 38-39 alliance, where you've got Russia, Iran, Turkey, literally in Israel's backyard, clearly within 10-15 miles of the Israel border on the Golan Heights, again underscoring the necessity for maintaining Israeli presence in the Golan Heights. So this is very serious, and where this is going to go, we'll see. The president and the Secretary of State will make a determination, but there's no question the Secretary of State was definitive on assigning blame.
Well, and when you look at our military capabilities, I mean, our military is not at its peak.
Hardly.
I mean, after a sequestration, you know, from just a material standpoint, it's been reduced under the Obama administration. But then, of course, morale with all the social experimentation. We've got to be very cautious in terms of where we engage militarily, especially when you're talking about not just Syria, but as you point out, you got Iran, you got Turkey, and
North Korea,
and Russia. Those, and then of course you've got China. Still out there as well.
Well, that's right. And again, you know, I'm not meaning to be partisan, but the United States military was severely weakened, as your listeners know, over the last 9 years. And so now President Trump has made a decision to build up our military and take care of our vets. And you can't just turn that ship on a dime. It takes time to build an aircraft carrier. It takes time to build ships, to build planes and refurbish planes. And there's a lot –
raise up military leadership as well.
I remember we were told how the shortage of pilots and all the rest. So there's a lot that has to be done. The good news is the decision has been made by this administration that the United States will be strong again militarily. We have to get to that point. But you're right. We never – one rule of warfare is you never go into battle until you know that you've got the resources and personnel to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Because we are committed. We leave no man on the field.
Absolutely. Michelle Bachmann, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to have a conversation with you. Look forward to seeing you tonight at a dinner that the Family Research Council is doing here in Washington.
It'll be wonderful, and you have the best audience, so thank you very much.
All right. Michelle Bachmann, member of our board and a great friend of the Family Research Council. All right, coming up, I'm going to be joined by another member of the Family Research Council board, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas. All this stuff that's happening, I mean, a lot of opportunities, but a lot of challenges. We live in a very challenging world. As Christians, how should we process all this? We need to pull back, disengage, or is this an opportunity to pray, to prepare, and to participate? That's our conversation with Dr. Floyd coming up next. You don't want to miss this conversation, folks. It's very practical, very real, and it's timely. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
It's happening everywhere and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and threatening religious freedom. How can churches help protect their community and be a voice for the vulnerable on these issues? What can state legislators do to push back against local ordinances and federal efforts to allow men into girls' showers, restrooms, and locker rooms? What can parents and voters do? In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and others, including experts and victims, to talk about what some states are doing to protect the safety and privacy of women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
In America, we now confront a crisis of governance created by our Supreme Court. Since the New Deal, the Supreme Court has become an almost unchallengeable, unreviewable super legislature by silencing all debate on pressing social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. This is why the vacancy created by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia must be filled with someone who will return the Supreme Court to its proper function as law interpreter, not lawmaker. That's why the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch, who has a proven track record of ruling as a constitutional originalist, has pleased conservatives. Upon confirmation, Judge Gorsuch will be faced with a host of pressing legal issues, and it is important to understand how he will rule and why. For an in-depth issue analysis discussing the type of justices who should sit on our highest court and a full explanation of Judge Gorsuch's qualifications for that role and why he should be confirmed, visit frc.org/Gorsuch.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Tony Perkins. The website, you guessed it, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, by the way, this summer, July the 29th through August the 5th, love to have you join us on a cruise to Alaska, Free to Believe cruise. We're going to have, in fact, my last guest is going to be on the cruise with us, Michelle Bachmann, General Jerry Boykin. We'll put him on guard duty. And we'll have Ken Blackwell and others will be there talking about the Trump administration, what's ahead, a lot of information, but and a lot of fun. Beautiful, beautiful scenery as we cruise up through Alaska. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, just again, a reminder that this program is made possible by folks like you across this country who care about America, our future, who are committed to advancing faith, family, and freedom. And if you would like to partner with us, no government money comes in here. All funded by individual donors all across this country that care deeply about the country and want the truth to get out there. And so Washington Watch is a ministry of the Family Research Council made possible by you. Go to TonyPerkins.com and partner with us. Become a part of the Family Research Council family. All right. It's been a busy week. It's not over yet because we're going to be broadcasting live from a gathering we're doing here in Washington tomorrow night. Joel Rosenberg is going to be on with me. We'll have George Barna will be joining me. So we got a great lineup tomorrow night. But a lot of, and of course, tomorrow, maybe during the program, we'll be seeing the vote on the president's Supreme Court nominee. So the just so much happening this week, been happening really for the last 77 days with the Trump administration, trying to process all of these things. And as Christians, you know, what do we do? How do we respond? Is this an opportunity? Is it a reprieve? You know, what should we be doing? Well, joining me now to talk about that and other issues, my good friend Dr. Ronnie Floyd. Oftentimes, he's several times set in for me here behind the microphone. He's a member of the board here at the Family Research Council, and as I mentioned, a good friend, and he's a pastor at Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas, former president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Ronnie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. It's always wonderful to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you here in Washington in the studio. You know, you've been here just, I mean, we've talked about a number of the issues since you've been here this week. In real time, you've been able to see how things have unfolded and you know, the stuff FRC has been involved in as we've been working on the health care repeal, religious liberty issues, and, of course, the Supreme Court. Your sense for Christians out there across the country who, you know, maybe they were involved in the election, but now they're wondering, you know, which way are we going? What should we be doing? Are you optimistic about what's ahead for us as a country?
I am optimistic because of the one who I really believe holds our future in his hands, and that's God himself. And I really believe the posture of believers today needs to be to humble ourselves and call out to God and to pray for the members of Congress, to pray for our president, our vice president, all of his cabinet. I mean, yes, we need unity. Yes, we need to come together. But even in the next few hours, Tony, think about it. The very thing that so many hung through this torrential election to see occur, possibly and prayerfully, will occur with the appointment of Judge Gorsuch. And that is a time to rejoice and to be thankful that God has given us this opportunity.
You're right. I mean, that was a key issue for a lot of people in this election. It moved from the theoretical, I know, all the way back to when I ran for the United States Senate back in 2002, that even then the court was an issue. And depending upon how that makeup of the Senate went, what President Bush would be able to do with the Supreme Court, if there were a vacancy, and it's usually in the context of if there is a vacancy. Well, in this election, it wasn't if.
That's right.
Because with the passing of Justice Scalia, it went from a theoretical possibility to a very real necessity that the president, one of his first acts would be to nominate someone to the Supreme Court. And so I think that brought a clear focus upon that issue for so many voters. And as you and I actually saw today in a presentation by George Barna, where conservative Christians turned out at an unprecedented rate of over 90%.
Amazing.
I mean, they got it. They knew what was at stake.
That's right. And thank God they did. I said this all along in the election, and I think we need to remember it tonight and tomorrow, is that presidents come and go, but his appointments literally can exist for a generation and affect generations beyond. And this is one of those moments in American history. I mean, this is a pivotal moment. And that's why we do not need to take it for granted, because things are absolutely all over the map in this city.
Yeah.
And while we're hopeful, I mean, it's a battle. And we all need to remember, Tony, as followers of Christ, this is not simply about the will of who does this and who gets to do that. It's deeper than that with us. We are in a spiritual warfare in this country. And we need to pray that God will give us an opportunity to once again see things like the sanctity of human life really brought to fruition in this country, and the real commitment to marriage between a man and a woman, and so many other issues, of which religious liberty is obviously one of the heartbeats of this organization. And that's why I love being on the board here at the Family Research Council, is that you and your organization have stood in the gap again and again and again, And it has never been popular, but you've always stood, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Floyd. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Dr. Ronnie Floyd, my guest. Looking at, you know, what is unfolding with the court and the opportunities that we have here, this is, I guess I'd use this analogy, Dr. Floyd, and a lot of our listeners can relate to this. You know, it's kind of like the NASCAR. You're familiar with NASCAR, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, they have the time trials, which simply gives you a position to participate from. I mean, you run the time trial and you get a position. Mm-hmm. I think what happened in November was more of a time trial, that we had an opportunity to position to make a difference, to win the race. We haven't accomplished anything yet. I mean, we've seen some positive things, don't get me wrong. But for Christians to take their hands off and say, oh, the work is done, I voted, that could not be any farther from the truth. We have a lot of work ahead of ourselves. But to your point, I think more than anything, we need to redouble our efforts in prayer.
Absolutely.
But prayer followed by action.
Absolutely. It's not one or the other in the life of the believer. And all we are seeing before our eyes over the last many days is the need even for more men and women to run for public office who have strong biblical values and see things from a biblical worldview. And we need to do everything we can to support groups that really are on the forefront of those critical issues. And thank God that we have the Family Research Council here and this daily radio program to be able to forward the message of holding high the truth of God. And it's so important that we never, ever forget that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Dr. Ronnie Floyd, my guest on this Thursday afternoon. You know, Dr. Floyd is a pastor. You know, one of the issues that was prominent in this election, and my last conversation with President Trump in the Oval Office about 3 weeks ago, he brought up once again. In fact, every time I talk to him, he brings this up. Mm. You want to guess what I'm going to talk to you about?
I'm not on national radio.
It's the Johnson Amendment.
Oh, yes, the Johnson Amendment.
And
yes.
The allowing pastors to speak freely. In fact, a letter was sent by the governor of Texas regarding – it was actually the governor and the attorney general of Texas calling upon the speaker – to move forward with the Johnson Amendment repeal so that, in fact, pastors have the ability and the freedom to speak without being harassed by the IRS. How important is that?
I think it's very important, Tony. But here's the reason so many churches are unaware, or pastors even, many of them, do not even know about it or see a need. They wouldn't even know. Is that this generation has been raised under the bondage of what occurred years ago. Therefore, while we have to stand regardless if there's religious liberty or not, because we stand for Christ, we stand for the biblical truth and belief that we have, we need to also understand the America that was created was an America based on the foundation of religious liberty. And the last people in the world that were restrained in the beginning of our nation were men who proclaimed the truth of God.
Right, right.
And the church needs to be unleashed. I mean, this could be an epic moment, and none of us need to doubt. Why would we do that? Why is that important? It's very important.
Well, it's telling. With there's about 99 kind of liberal religious organizations lining up against the repeal of the Johnson Amendment. Of course, my take on that is they've been talking politics forever.
Absolutely. So and they've done it freely and never without accountability.
Because the IRS has targeted conservative groups, especially under the Obama administration. Look, I've actually – in those few cases where – in fact, there was a church during George W. Bush's tenure as president, a liberal church, I believe out in California, the IRS investigated because they spoke about something about the war and the policy and something. And I defended it because I think mm-hmm. pastors should have the freedom mm-hmm. to speak anything that God puts on their heart.
That's
now,
right.
They will give an account to God as to mm-hmm. whether or not what they had to say was biblical.
That's correct.
But that's not the role of the state to mm-hmm. determine.
That's right. And we don't need to forget the role of religious liberty. Government has way too much reach today. We need to free the church to do what the church is here to do. I'm convinced, Tony, that when you look at the issues of poverty, you look at the issues of racial disunity, you look at other issues that are socially oriented issues, if the church does not stand up and take over some of those, we do not need to have a nation that is dependent upon the government.
Well, I would say not. I would say take those issues back.
Yes, right.
These exactly. are issues that were long
God has
within.
Given us to
that's
them.
Absolutely right. They were long within the realm of the church, whether it is the issue of poverty mm-hmm. or whether it's the issue of the sanctity of human life
right.
or whether it is the issue of human sexuality. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are issues. Marriage was long before in
Absolutely.
The church. It is a moral and a spiritual issue. The sanctity of life, those created in the image of God, that's a spiritual and a moral issue. What's happened in the last 40 years is that we've had politicians that have politicized those issues.
That's right.
And then when the church, pastors in particular, have sought to address them, mm-hmm. oh, those are political issues. Get
right.
your hands off.
Exactly. And therefore, we have a generation of pastors, many of them, who have been silent. And the last group in the world that needs to be silent is the church. This is a moment. If we want to talk about moments and we talk about how the crisis is so existent in America today, absolutely we're in a crisis as a nation. But we're in a crisis because we're not spiritually healthy.
Right.
And we need the church to rise and to move us along the way to health, spiritually speaking.
You and I have had this conversation. You know, we are in a we live in a nation and a society that, to a large degree, has been deconstructed by the left, by liberals. I mean, even to the point where, you know, we're having public debates over male and female, over gender. I mean, Jesus in Matthew 19 says, "Have you not read from the beginning God created them
right.
male and female?" I mean, those are issues that have never, ever been questions. But we're at a point of this deconstruction where we're mm-hmm. actually debating those very issues.
Yeah.
Cultural these societal institutions are no longer able to hold this country together. If there's one thing that I believe holds the hope for America, it is a spiritual revival driven by the Word of God preached from the pulpits of our churches that challenge our people to live out their faith in such a real way that is contagious for everyone around them as we live in a society that is imploding and people are looking for the truth and for answers of what life means.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'll tell you, Tony, you know, relating to the gender issue, we all need to remember gender is not fluid. God created male and female. It's not a choice factor. It is ordained by God that we are what we are in that relationship. And
we don't need to back away or
absolutely.
Apologize.
There's
for that.
No reason for that. And in all this stuff, the only thing that's ever going to turn it around, the only thing that's ever going to really change long term is the next great spiritual awakening in America. We cannot forget that ultimately that should be our heart and our goal so that the gospel can advance to the nations of the world.
My view is, we're almost out of time, Dr. Floyd, that requires courage.
Absolutely.
On behalf of the men and women of God, both behind the pulpit and in the pew, to live authentic, Christian, Spirit-filled lives.
And I say, amen.
It's a good place to say it. All right, folks, we're out of time for today, but we'll be back again tomorrow, Lord willing, and I hope you will as well. It'll be Friday, but I'll be here. Until then, you know what the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 6. He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C.
For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.